providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Mike Larson. In these next two segments, we are going to focus almost exclusively on the resource sector, and in terms of the resource sector, almost exclusively on the precious metals. We are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, look, there's no denying that precious metals have garnered at least a little bit more of or intention out of investors on the back of that Fed statement, but then also really on the back of some of this higher inflation data. We're going to cover the broad aspects of the market, and then in the final segment of this weekend show, we're going to dive a bit more into some of the news, specifically out of some of the larger stocks and some of those M&A transactions we've seen on what has consistently been Monday over the last few weeks. Jeff, I want to recap a recent missive you sent out to everyone subscribed to the email list at the CPM Group, and that deals with gold and silver demand. Just simply on the demand side of things, please provide an update for us. What are you seeing in terms of investment demand for precious metals now?
Yeah, it's interesting because we're seeing pretty strong demand for physical gold and silver from investors. Coin sales, which are longer-term investors who buy based on the state of the world, the economy, political things, their own financial. Coin sales are up sharply this year. Small bars are up sharply this year. You're seeing very strong investment demand. And you're seeing a little bit strange stuff like between the ETFs and the coin demand in that, you know, the coin buyers are buying when the price is low. And some of the ETF guys who are probably more shorter term trading oriented people, they'll buy low and then they'll sell high, but the coin people don't sell when it gets high. So, you know, you're seeing pretty strong demand for gold and silver on the part of investors. It was very high last year. Gold and silver investment demand probably both doubled from 2019 to 2020. And what we're seeing this year is they're not doubling again, but they're staying very high. And we expect that to continue now for the next several years, actually.
Well, Jeff, as the great Frank Holmes always talks about, there's both the fear trade and the love trade with gold. And when we have the recent holiday of Diwali over in India and the Asian holiday and seasonal buying, do you see that shaping up to give any more demand to the precious metals? And how does that factor in with the fear trade?
I didn't see a tremendous increase in gold demand for Diwali this year. I mean, it was obviously earlier than usual, but I didn't see anything remarkable. But, you know, clearly that's there. The Chinese and Southeast Asian people who look at the Lunar New Year as a big buying opportunity, there is some interest there. There is some interest in precious metals, I guess you would say more out of fear than love, because of economic conditions within China and, you know, in the real estate market and also political conditions. You're seeing some increase in investment demand there, and that's probably going to continue. And then if you go away from Asia, you can talk about the fear and the love trade. You know, I mean, we look at the various things that stimulate investment demand, and a lot of it has been safe haven buying, portfolio diversification, currency hedge buying. But now, last week, all of a sudden, you saw a surge of what I guess you would call fear buying, which was based on the high PPI and CPI reports for October that were released during the past week by the United States BLS.
Jeff, let's also talk about some of the gold and silver inventories. We're definitely going to get into inflation and some of the economic data, but still focused on gold and silver. You've stated the gold and silver inventories are close to record highs. What are you seeing here? Why does this matter for investors?
I got called on the carpet by someone. Look, gold and silver market inventories are at record highs. And for gold, it's probably record highs, you know, because investors don't sell their gold, they just accumulate it over time. But you're seeing record high levels of gold and silver stored in London and also in New York in reported market inventories and in China too. So there's ample silver and gold out there to meet this investment demand. You know, and you're seeing some people who are saying, oh, well, there's not enough silver. And, you know, I've heard claims that the U.S. Mint isn't even making silver coins. But the reality is that they're making more silver coins than they have for several years. I think the production and sales of silver coins by the U.S. Mint is probably the highest level since 2016 this year. And it's definitely up from last year. So it's not a matter that they can't get the silver. That, you know, there's plenty of silver around. The U.S. Mint has had some issues with quality control on their blanks. But even with even in the face of that, you know, U.S. Silver Eagle coin sales through October were up 16-17% from a year ago, and they were double what they were in 2018-2019. So, you know, there's ample metal to meet investment demand, and investors are taking advantage of that.
Yeah, great point, Jeff. And a lot of times investors conflate the problems that the mints have getting the blanks with, hey, we're out of silver, which is not really the case at all. We have got plenty of silver. It's just sometimes some supply bottlenecks along the way. But let's shift it over into the inflation news that we got this last week. The CPI number came in at 6.2%, so running hotter than it was the month before, and really a lot higher than that 2% inflation the Fed said they wanted for about a year or two. They wanted to see that higher inflation. They wanted it to run hot. Well, it's running hot now, and the markets responded. We've seen a little bit of a boost in the gold and silver prices as a result. People have filtered in. We've got the taper underway from the Fed. What do you make of it all, Jeff?
Well, you know, inflation, the inflation data for October was much higher than we thought, and it was much more problematic than we've seen before. You know, we've seen higher inflation figures really for the last year over the course, you know, starting probably around February, March, April of this year, you've seen very high inflation numbers. But the inflation, the headline inflation, and even the headline inflation figures that we've seen have been primarily pushed by petroleum-based energy products and used cars. Those things were running 40% higher year over year. From say March through June or July, July, August, September, they came off. But you saw you saw some increases in the prices of other things year over year, but you're measuring against 2020 when, you know, for example, no one was driving, so gasoline prices were lower. But, you know, you were watching earlier this year in the summer, in the second and third quarters, you were watching inflation that was driven by those two major factors primarily. And if you look at the October data, prices were higher across the board pretty much. You know, and so you saw much more inflationary pressures. That's a combination of increased demand and supply problems. And on the increased demand, people don't realize, you know, for example, they talk about the backup of ships wanting to offload in Long Beach City and Los Angeles, and they don't realize that, you know, U.S. imports are up like 27% from 2019 levels. Yeah, it's not that we've seen a recovery in demand of by U.S. consumers and corporations. We have seen an enormous expansion, and that expansion was probably occurring already in 2019. It was interrupted by the pandemic and the lockdown, but now that rise in demand for goods and services has skyrocketed. And so you've got this combination of, hey, we have to get back online at a time when people don't want to work anymore because they realize that life is more than work. But, you know, you've got this supply constraints, but you've got a big surge in demand. I think all of that works itself out over the next several quarters. You know, when the Fed used the term transitory inflation in the second quarter, there were a lot of people who jumped on it and thought that they were talking about 1 or 2 months. And we were saying, no, when the Fed talked about transitory inflation, they were talking maybe the next 12 months into early 2022. But by the time you get into mid-2022, a lot of those inflationary pressures ought to be expected to come down. That's what they meant. So we're still in that place where you could say this is transitory, but it is scary. And if you look at it month to month, which is probably a more accurate way to look at it because 2020 was such a messed up year, you know, we saw 0.9% changes in inflation in June, and then it came down and it was like 0.4% in August and September. Is back up to 0.9% in October. That's very worrisome because that's that month-to-month change in prices, and you're seeing it across the board now. So I think inflation, you know, we saw the gold and silver prices rise sharply in response to the CPI figures, probably come off a little bit now, but I think that inflation continues to be an issue that drives investment demand for gold and silver for at least the next 3 or 4 months.
Okay, well, that's encouraging for precious metals investors. But look, I know there's unlimited amounts of debate whether transitory, just what time frame even the Fed was referring to, what transitory means, because quite frankly, it's open to interpretation what the definition time frame wise of transitory is. Plus, man, oh man, we hear so much about this supply chain issue. I've gotten tired of hearing about it because it seems like everybody is using it as an excuse. No matter what store you go into, it's almost a fallback excuse now for everybody. But the other side of the equation here that you outlined is that the consumer, right? That there's two sides to an inflation story. It's the supply side, which you can have shocks on the supply side that impacts inflation. But you also need that demand. People need to be buying products. And I'm seeing it around Vancouver. I'm seeing it in other places too, is that the consumer is still out there purchasing goods. I realize it's maybe not everybody, but there is still a what seems to be strong consumer base. What is this predicated on in your eyes, Jeff? Is it because everyone was locked down for, let's say, around a year, and now they have all this built-up demand? Was it also because the government was putting money into the bank accounts of individuals? What has led to this really explosion in the demand side of that equation?
Yeah, like I said, I think that, you know, possibly the demand increases were coiling up to rise sharply already in 2019, and it was kind of abrogated. But yeah, one of the major factors is because of the lockdown, there were any number of people who continued to A, earn money, and B, get a lot of money from the federal government, not just the United States, but around the world. You had a lot of government payments and income support programs that gave people a lot of money at a time when they couldn't spend it. Yeah, they weren't allowed to go out and eat. They weren't allowed to go out and shop. Stores were closed down. They didn't do traveling. You know, the incidence of driving, let alone aircraft and railroads and vacation taking and business travel, all of that contracted sharply at a time when there was a lot of money coming into people and they are spending it.
Well, Jeff, let me just ask you on the inflation. There's definitely the base effect year over year that we've seen, and there are these supply chain issues, but there's a lot of issues in inflation that were creeping up before this even came about and before there even was a pandemic. The oil and gas industry was underinvested in and was pushed back to get into renewables. The Biden administration blocked the Keystone Pipeline. Now they want to take the Line 5 offline. So some of those oil prices were going to rise anyways. And the oil prices were low in the previous year and actually went negative, and they were due to rebound up higher. But we're seeing rent up 16%. That's not a supply chain issue. We're seeing food at the grocery store that's domestic up something like 6 to 8% for most families at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's not stuck in a tanker, you know, from China on the LA shore. So there are some legitimate inflation things that are going to be stickier. How do you take apart the different parts, you know, the parts that are base effect and supply chain, and how much of this is going to stick around for us, and what will the Fed policy be in response?
Yeah. Well, you know, first off, in terms of unpacking inflation, a lot of it has to be sort of guesswork right now because you really don't know. You can look at, for example, food. And yeah, there's been an increase in the demand side and there have been supply problems. You know, one of the astounding things that people have discovered through the news over the last few weeks is that the turnover rate for Series A intercity truck drivers is 90% a year in the United States. Yeah, and so yeah, a lot of the supply chain problems aren't ships at sea. It's that there aren't trucks there, and you can't get, you know, cereal from the northern Midwest to the coasts and things like that. So you have to unpack it. But some of it clearly is also going to be non-transitory or secular inflation. And, you know, if you look at food, if you look at clothing, you look at other issues, well, you're going to have to say, okay, the increase month to month or the increase year over year right now is 8% for this particular thing. And maybe 5% of that is transitory and goes away, but the other 3% stays. So you've got a much higher situation, you know, and with apparel, for example, apparel prices have been very low for decades in terms of inflationary pressures. So you've got to unpack each sector and each segment of the economy and each segment of the price indices, you know, has transitory and secular pressures. And that's really difficult. And the Fed, you know, I have to say, the Fed has one of the best economics research teams, if not the best economic research team in the world. And they have an enormous team that just looks at inflation factors. They look at labor. They look at labor costs, and they estimate that stuff. I think the Fed is realizing that, yeah, they have to, William McChesney Martin said is the Fed's job is to lean into the breeze of inflation. Well, it's more than a breeze right now. But the Fed realizes they have to be somewhat less accommodating, but they also have to continue to keep the thing going. And as the Fed has said for 20, 30 years now, you know, they can stanch the bleeding of a recession. They cannot cause long-term growth. All of that depends on better fiscal policy. And the fiscal policy system, which is set by the administration and the Congress, has been broken for decades in the United States. And it shows no signs of being repaired anytime soon. So you still have a lot of those issues. And the Fed has this terrible problem where, you know, they're being charged with trying to keep the economy from rolling over into depression and deflation, but they're not getting any support on the fiscal side. And there's only so much you can do with that monetary policy. And the Fed is saying, you know, yeah, we'll do what we can, but you guys really need to get your fiscal house in order. And the Congress isn't doing that right now.
All right, Jeff, we're going to leave the inflation debate, I guess, behind us now. But undoubtedly, we will be talking about that as we transition into next year. I do want to shift the focus into some of the news that's come out of the resource sector in terms of M&As. Over the last three Mondays, we have seen deals and some fairly big deals, the largest being Newcrest takeover of Pretium. That's $2.8 billion US. We also saw Gold Star Resources taken over by a Chinese company. Caliber took over Fiore. What's your takeaway from some of this M&A that we're seeing more in the larger and mid-tier miners?
Yeah, well, I think what you're seeing are several things. One is that, you know, the larger mining companies constantly have to look for replacement reserves and resources. And they haven't done a particularly great job in exploration and discovery. So the solution is buying reserves and resources by buying mid-tier companies. Yeah, you know, Pretium is a fabulous company. It really was fabulously well managed. They built Brucejack from pasture land through permitting to construction to operation in an incredibly short period of time, given, you know, what happens with mining construction these days. They have an enormous mine with tremendous reserves and resources and low costs. They're a perfect addition to a company like Newcrest. They will lower the average cost and boost reserves and resources. So that's a really good one. And you're going to see more of those things because the majors really need to find reserves and resources, and they're not finding it through their exploration projects, not because the metal's not there, but because of the structural issues confronting modern day exploration, mining exploration. So you're going to see more M&A. And one of the things that we've picked up is, yes, the Chinese government has been saying to the Chinese industry, gold mining industry and mining and metals mining industry for some years, you guys really need to do a better job in finding and investing in attractive offshore properties. And you're seeing now this year a reiteration with emphasis of that stricture. You know, get out there and find good properties and invest in them. So I think that there's going to be increased competition in the M&A area. And it's one of the things that's going to happen.
Well, Jeff, just along this topic of M&A, we've heard from a couple different newsletter writers and analysts and people we bring on the show that this is what we need to do to attract generalists to this industry is have these companies bulk up in size. So whether it's the Barrick Randgold or the Newmont Gold Corp or this Kirkland Lake Agnico Eagle, even this one with the Pretium and Newcrest. Do you think it's going to make a difference that these companies get bigger where they actually get picked up by institutional funds, or do you think it's going to move the needle with the generalist investors?
I don't think it's going to move the needle. Yeah, I think the entire gold mining industry, you know, like the top 10, 20 companies, gold mining companies in the world could merge, and they'd still be too small for the largest asset management companies. And the largest asset management companies have their own problems. And, you know, part of the problem, I mean, we have a list of like six issues that are causing institutional investors to not invest in mining. And one or two of them have to do with mining. And the others have to do with changes within the institutional investment market that have nothing to do with mining and everything to do with moving away from asset management companies having analysts and portfolio managers study companies and invest in individual companies. They're moving away from that, and they're moving toward AI-generated funds, you know, indexed ETF funds, indexed funds that actually have been outperforming the performance of humanly managed funds at a lower cost for the fund management companies. And those things are nothing that have to do with mining and nothing that the mining industry can do to change, but they are going to continue to cause institutional investment into the mining industry to be distracted and contracting. So I don't think bulking up the companies will not boost institutional investing. I think, you know, really what you need to do is, you know, work on lowering your costs and building your reserves and resources and having a well-operated company. And that will attract smaller funds and institutional investors and individual investors and family offices who are interested in profitable companies as opposed to large companies.
It's a process, right? But it all comes back to running these mining companies profitably. Seems like they should already be focused on that, but boy, oh boy, we have seen in the past companies get a bit distracted with maybe other aspects trying to build on that. Just a real quick question here regarding the Newcrest takeover of Pretium. This happened in the Golden Triangle. What are your thoughts on the Golden Triangle? Do you think that we could see some more consolidation within the Golden Triangle?
I'm not sure if we'll see consolidation, but there's definitely been an increased interest in exploring for and finding properties in that area. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see some of the properties that have been well known for years there actually start moving more rapidly into development toward production. And, it's going to be increased competition for those properties. So, you know, the Golden Triangle in British Columbia is a very attractive prospective area. Pretium kind of proved that. Seabridge indicated that it was there. Pretium proved how easy, you know, how profitable it can be to move it forward. And I think that you're going to see more and more companies competing for space up there. I'm not sure if you'll see consolidation, but you'll see some of those properties bought by larger companies.
Okay, final question before I get you out of here, Jeff. What matters for precious metals investors moving into 2022?
I think one of the things that's going to matter, you know, we talked about this, is, you know, you look at that list of things. Inflation is going to be problematic going into 2022, but probably will wane as the year progresses. Interest rates will rise, but they're not going to rise so much that they're going to be problematic. currency rates, the dollar will probably be relatively strong compared to what a lot of people expect. I think the big scary thing is going to be politics. Is it domestic U.S. politics, domestic politics in other countries, including some countries that other people think of as being sort of homogenous and stable? I think you're going to see a lot of domestic political unrest in major economies and nations. And then you're going to see increased tensions among countries and reduced cooperation among countries at the same time that you still have this massive growth in government deficits and private debt, borrowing, leading to ever larger debt. You know, we all look at the U.S. Treasury's debt, but the reality is that debt has been growing for corporations, for private individuals, and for all governments. And that is going to continue to hang over the economy and the financial markets throughout 2022 and probably for a couple of years after that, at least.
All right, Jeff, we're wrapping it up here. Always interesting to get your thoughts. I appreciate you spending some time with us on this weekend show. If you're interested in more of what the CPM Group does, you can visit their website, cpmgroup.com. I'll also post a link on that weekend show posting. Everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Again, please go back through the week on our website, kereport.com. Listen to all those company interviews and daily editorials that we recorded and posted throughout the week. We'll be back with you all next week. I hope you all have a very great weekend. Jeff, again, thanks for your time.
Thank you.